creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another goddamn horror podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Ryan Danley, coming to you from a still sunshiny Portland, Oregon, because we, for some reason, voted daylight savings time away. And then they were like, everybody's like, yep, it's done. And then they were like, nah, we're not going to do that.
Like, we're just playing.
We're just playing with that. And so everybody's up an hour. Listen. I need an hour of sleep more than anybody knows. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a well person already. You know what I mean? And so, like,
take away that hour of sleep, and you right. fucked up, buddy.
It's like, I got things at night. You know what I mean? Like, I got like, they're like, oh, you're home an hour earlier. That's not how any of this works. You know what I mean? Like, fuck daylight savings time. Fuck changing the clocks. Let's just let it roll. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Environment, do the environment thing.
Like, we're like, don't you want to do stuff outside? I'm like, I can do it. Yeah. Mm-mm. But I will figure that
Stop
out.
Stop making me work during.
Right. Exactly. Like, there's other ways to give me time. Like,
my skin is actively angry at the sunlight.
Right.
So, like, I'm just, you don't need to give me more of that. That's fine.
I do stand up comedy every night of the week. I do freaking the podcast. I do all of the stuff. And, you know, I mean, there is a normal job that I work, you know what
That's
I mean,
the
where
secret.
Like where people
don't know that about comedy.
People are like, oh, like they think, you know, they look at all this jet set lifestyle and be like, that dude must just do this full time. But you
that
know
that dude has red lights, he must be very lucky.
Yeah, crazy.
we have coming to you from the other side of the country, we got Graham coming to you from Flatbush. What's up, Graham?
I got an announcement, actually. This is pretty cool. We missed the 3-year anniversary of another goddamn horror podcast. We started on early February 9th, I believe. We should have said something. But yesterday, which was also what day, Ryan? 3/11 day. That's right.
666.
It was our exact 3-year anniversary of our first guest ever. TJ from Ghastly Sound.
Oh shit!
Had our original intro music from. So,
yeah.
Shout out to TJ and Ghastly Sound, and shout out to Jason Daniels for our current theme, which kicks ass. And shout out to us for 3 years of doing like weekly podcast. That's fucking insane to me.
Yeah,
dude, we only almost broke up like twice.
Yeah,
and I think both of those times
in 3 years,
the movie
that's
just like,
great.
Like destroying our soul. So like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
about
it was one of those times. Was definitely my fault.
Yeah.
Well, it was my fault for anyways. Speak no evil. Go see it, and you can come back and tell if it was worth breaking up our podcast over. Because it was this close. I actually said, you know what, maybe this just isn't gonna work anymore. Jonas, how's Bushwick?
Bushwick is dope. It's great right now, but I'm not even gonna lament about Bushwick. I'm just gonna get right into our guest, because we have an awesome guest tonight. We have author, artist, graphic novelist, we have Tina Horn here today from D-Prog. How you doing?
Hello. Well, you just made it sound like tuning in from Bushwick, tuning in from Portland, tuning in from D-Prog.
I just wanted to throw D-Prog out there as like, you're from that. So
I am sort of, psychically, in my mind, I'm there.
I like that. It's if for those who don't know, D-Prog is a comic book, and I have it.
Would you call it a comic book or a graphic novel? What are we going to call this?
I mean, what is the, I feel like a broken record talking about what I think the distinction is. I'm curious how you define them differently.
That's a monthly book and a graphic novel is those put together, a series of those put together, is how I see them.
Real quick, I think a graphic novel is a long form story in comic book form. I think what Graham is talking about is a trade, which is where they take all of them and they put them together. I think this is a comic book because it's a singular, like it's a section of the thing that would be
a larger story.
It's a serial. You know what I mean? So like that would be mine.
The reason I even asked the question is because after reading it, it definitely is a comic book, but it has a graphic novel feeling.
Yeah. Ooh, like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, like the way that it's created, like the way that the world building is, the way that like the content of it, like it has a very graphic novel feel to me. And that's not to say that it is one, but like, again, it's definitely is a comic book. Like I would say at the end of the day, I would call it a comic book as well, but it definitely has that like kind of like the first time I read a Frank Miller thing. Like when I'm looking at it, you know, I'm like, oh, this is definitely like, this is not just just a comic book feeling to me. Like this feels like something.
I hear you on that. Like it's like reading the comic, it did feel like a graphic novel because you get a lot of information, you get a lot of the characters, but you also feel just set right in. Like it's really easy to sit in, and then stuff happens, but you're like, this is going more. So you feel like, oh, I need more of this, and I wish it was all in one book right now.
Right. You're like, can this be like a longer thing or like
yeah. So
well, that is very nice of all of you to say. I feel like the difference, it kind of has to do with like marketing and just like taking comic books that are seen as like quote unquote trashy and like making them seem quote unquote classier. Right. So like
sure.
Yeah. A graphic novel would win the Pulitzer Prize and Deep Rock, I'm sure, will one day.
Yeah.
But then like comic books are, you know, for kids, which this book is not.
Depends
on how cool your mom is, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Cool moms give Deep Rock to their kids on their 18th birthday. Right. Or like depending on, you know, the age of adulthood wherever you are tuning in from. Right. But yeah, it's interesting to think about like writing a novel versus writing a comic. Like writing a comic, I mean this is another goddamn horror podcast. Like horror is totally in a genre along with sci-fi or even porn or like romance novels, like that is seen as like déclassé. And the like comics, I feel like, are a medium that is seen also as like lowbrow. And like not for, you know, pushes glasses up on nose, or monocle, pushes monocle up on nose.
Pushers.
type people. And so I love working in mediums that are like looked down on by other, like if somebody like looks down on the genre or medium that you're working in, you're probably on the right track for shit that people actually like.
Mm-hmm. I have like the same I feel you.
Juicy shit that actually has, I think, like more to say about the human experience and all the lofty things that like, you know, like literature or cinema is supposed to do. Like you often find the realest shit in the filthiest places.
You're really preaching to the choir. That. I think
shooting
like
fish in a barrel.
Yeah, I think that like which is super fun, by the way. But it's and harder than you think. You got to aim above them.
Is that the new throwing hatch? You could throw it like hatchets or like shoot fish in a barrel. Is that the new Brooklyn
I mean this
thing?
Is I mean
the hatchets thing.
One of my best friends is literally a hatchet master at an axe throwing bar, so like that's fucking
Can he shoot fish in a barrel?
Probably not. He's probably very bad at that, actually, come to think of it.
we're way more gunny in Portland than they are in Brooklyn. I will say that, like, it's a
You're
a
not different wrong.
No, I agree with you like 100%. I also think that generally because of the lack of avenues for you know, that sort of art to perverted art or whatever you want to call it to come through, awesome. that it is more likely that you are going to get better art because the people who are going to go through the hoops to make that happen, it's like, you know, like we on this show really focus, we'll watch all the big horror movies, but our main focus is on independent horror, and the hoops to get the money to make the movies, and there's not just a studio that's like, okay, here's $20 million, go make a tearjerker or whatever. It's like people like scraping money together, so the art that's going to come from that, whether it be your comic book, whether, like, you know what I mean? A, not having the restrictions of the investment level bosses, kind of, and then also having those things, you're going to just get better art. I mean, like, yeah. And Deep Rock is a great, you know, a great example of that as a comic, as a lifelong comic book reader. The independent comic books, particularly now, are stellar. You know, yeah. and your book is like a great example of what's available out there, because like we all used to take like a grain of salt with independent comics, like, okay, the artistry is going to be a little blah, 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 but we're all going to support it because they sell it at the zine shop and we want to be cool with the art and stuff like that. But this thing is beautiful. The penciling and the everything is gorgeous. It plays off like it was drawn, like it comes across like it's like Bendis and homies drew it, you know what I mean? Like it's got that vibe to it. And the story is also very, very good. And no disrespect to
very horny too.
No disrespect to
pervy.
No disrespect to pervy and horny. Yeah.
No disrespect to Brian Michael Bendis, because he wrote Scarlet, and that is an amazing comic book. Have you read Scarlet, Tina?
I haven't read Scarlet. I definitely am a big Alias head, aka Jessica Jones. Yeah, so I love Bendis.
Yeah, Scarlet is a cop killer, which is a lot of fun. Yeah,
you got the record.
Yeah, exactly. I figured you were safe company for that. So yeah, So you're a writer. How does Deep Rock come together?
Yeah, totally. First of all, I want to, you know, you've already mentioned the visuals, and I want to shout out the art team and the publisher. I'll start with the publisher, you know, like shouting out indie folks that are keeping it real. So Dead Sky is the publisher of Deep Rock, and they are newish and indie and putting out a lot of horror. They're specializing in like splatter westerns, which I feel like your audience would be particularly into. And I really want to give love to the art team. So Lisa Sterl is the illustrator, meaning she did the pencils and inks, and Gab Contras did the art, and Danny did the covers, and Steve Wands, who is the co-publisher of Dead Sky, did the lettering. And so that's a good segue into how Deep Rock came to be. And I think that the level of professionalism in terms of quality that you see in Deep Rock, but in an indie milieu, definitely comes from the fact that we've all been working, like everybody on this team, including the publishers, have been working in the comics industry for a while. A lot of these folks even longer than me, much longer than me. And I think that this book and the other titles from Dead Sky like come from wanting to make titles that are like more pervy and more raw and grittier than sometimes the like bigger publishers can,
sure,
are interested in or allow. And Steve Wands has been the letterer for another comic that I do, Safe Sex, which is on Image, which,
oh nice,
shout out to Image, I love them, love working with them. This is volume 2 of Safe Sex, also lots of horror and ultra violence and perviness, for, yeah. So if you like if you like Deep Prog, if you like, it's just another goddamn horror comic, really.
Right. Awesome.
We love that. Image actually has one of my favorite graphic novels that I was going to compare Deep Prog to, like, stylistically, and that's Lovesick. Lovesick.
Yes,
is,
I love Lovesick.
Yeah, and they remind, like, I literally have them right next to each other on my little book area right here. And, like, as I was reading, because I had just finished Lovesick, the first one, I had just finished it, and then I had gotten the copy of Deep Prog in the mail. So, like, right afterwards, I read Deep Prog, and I was like, oh, shit. I was like, this
Are
is,
you
like...
okay?
So good. and like, but just as I was reading both of them, I was like, oh, this is like, these are strange bedfellows, but like in a really good way, you know?
Yeah, that's a good double bill for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was actually, you know, Image and IDW both do a really good job with actually like letting comic books be comic books, you know, with and have and having a major presence, you know what I mean? And like, and I mean, Image has I don't want to say they got lucky because that implies that it just happened, but you know, having that Walking Dead in their back pocket is a nice good thing for them. So it's but yeah
Walking Dead pays the bills for a lot of Image creators for sure. And and so Steve Wands, the co-publisher and letterer of Deep Prog, has been the letterer of Safe Sex, my Image book, for years. And he messaged me a couple of years ago at this point, I guess, to say that he was, you know, putting some juice behind this indie imprint. And did I want to pitch him? And that's, you know, the beauty of working with people and developing relationships in any field is that then somebody's putting a project together and they think of you, they like your work. Hopefully they're not like, it's a sign that they're not like horrified by having to work with you and deal with your, you know, relationship to deadlines again. But yeah. And I had, it was, you gotta, when you're a freelance creative professional in any field, in any medium, you gotta have those ideas like burning a hole in your pocket for that moment when opportunity knocks. And sometimes you have to make that opportunity yourself for sure.
Sure.
But yeah, I had this idea for a hard-boiled detective thriller with a dyke detective, and I'm a dyke, so I'm allowed to use that word. gotta shout that out for, you know,
sure,
the internet, yeah, platforms, sure, that sometimes are like, don't use hate speech. I'm like, I'm not hate myself.
Right.
But yeah, so Tate Debs is the detective protagonist of Deep Prog, and she's a leather dyke like me. In some ways, I hope that she is not like me. She's a bit of a scoundrel in the tradition of, you know, a lot of great hard-boiled detective fiction like Raymond Chandler and Philip Marlowe. Or I always do that, Dashiell Hammett. Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. But even like John Constantine, Hellblazer, not different from Hellraiser, although all my work is influenced by Clive Barker as well, for sure.
I love that.
But do you guys have this Hellraiser, Hellblazer problem? I feel like a horror people know what I mean, where you say one when you mean the other.
I don't have a problem with that, but I can see how easily that would be because I have a problem. I have a million different things just like that in my brain. So I fully get it. Not related at all. I will, for whatever reason, call Starbucks 7-Eleven, like in a conversation. Like, I'm going to run
That's
a 7-Eleven.
Appropriate.
Oddly, kind of appropriate, but I've been doing it for like 20 years, and I don't know why. So I get it. It's not as cool.
It's not as cool as
yours.
No, mine's not. I can't call Peacock and Paramount the right name ever.
Oh, yeah.
And I've tried, and Molly's really mad at me at this point about it. it's constant.
In the background, god damn it, it's Peacock, man. What are you
I
doing?
Tried calling it the cock, but that doesn't work. Like, I keep forgetting.
That's a bar in New York, and it's a fantastic one, actually.
Yeah, you don't want to call it the Mount. That's also something different.
Exactly. You can't combine them and be it like the Paracock or like.
Well,
you know,
because they had
Peacock.
They had Peacocktober, which was their Halloween stuff. And then they took it away last year. And I was like, well, I didn't like it, but you can't take it away now. So now you're just the cock.
Right. That's true. Do you feel like somebody sat him down and be like, listen, we can't call it Peacocktober. Okay. We can't do that because people are going to get the wrong idea about our programming.
I thought it was so fun.
I think they should have, some intern, you gotta listen to, this is why you have to listen to interns.
Right. That's why you have
to. Should have spoken up, right. But they were too scared to. That's my take.
I feel like it probably was. It's probably an intern that woke up drunk after like just a hangover. He's just like, hey, you shouldn't say Cocktober. People are, you know what? I'm fired, ain't I? I'm fired.
Like, oh, I hear it now.
So which comes first? Because you are a writer and you have bookie books. Mm-hmm. And I also am a writer and a reader and
reader of bookie books.
A reader of bookie books, but also a reader of comic books. And I've read and I've been reading comic books literally my entire life. And I read bookie books and all sorts of things. I'm a fan of the word. I struggle in my attempts at writing comic books.
Interesting.
So I'm curious as to, I even asked a friend of the show David Walker to help me with the writing part of it. And he said he'd give me anything, but he's a busy guy. And I didn't know, like, I just can't get it. Is making that transition hard is basically what I'm getting to.
Such a great question. I realized I got derailed and I didn't finish the sort of log line for DPROG, which is that the Leather Dyke Detective specializes in rescuing people from cults. DPROG is like deprogramming, right? So it's definitely like a mystery, serial, crime thriller centered around, you know, and there's like femme fatale who, you know, comes to Tate's office in the back of a video store and you know, begs for help finding her brother who's been taken in by a cult, but it's also Southern California, so it's like
cult be any cult,
a dime a dozen. Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's like, Scientology.
Yeah, so was your brother taken in by like the smoothie shop down the street?
Right.
Smoothie shops here feel like, what is this powder that you are putting in my acai bowl? And
the Church of Erewhon.
Yes. Exactly.
It's all.
What is capitalism if not a death cult? But
that's right. It all boils down to QAnon at this point. So
absolutely. Yeah. And part of the reason that I've been obsessed with cults my whole life, and some people in my family were in a cult before I was born, and so I've sort of my like fascination with like BDSM and kink predates my knowledge that people in my family were in a cult. And so I've explored that in my nonfiction work, in my bookie books. This is the first time that I've tried to actually like dramatize it in like a genre fiction story. So cool. I'm excited about that. But then on the topic of transitioning from like being a journalist and a podcaster myself, my podcast is called Why Are People Into That? And actually the book version of the podcast is out in June 2024 from Hachette. So you can pre-order that now if you want to read words without pictures. You want to read more about like queer, pervy, sex, nonfiction. So in terms of transitioning from prose to comics, I think that I took to it because, well, it was also a transition for me between fiction and nonfiction. I'd never really written fiction before I got the opportunity to write safe sex.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also beautiful art, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not a visual artist, so I can only take credit for having great taste in collaborating.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was exciting to start writing fiction because, first of all, like, you don't have to like have a fact checker look at things, you know, you can just fucking make it up. That's fun. And, you know, reporting is a lot of like emotional labor. So it's kind of nice to be like, I'm just, instead of the emotional labor of interviewing people, I can just sort of like take a flashlight and go into the dusty recesses of my subconscious to find characters. So that was fun. And like I was saying, you know, I am a lifelong fan of comics and movies and like all kinds of pop culture, you know, music too. Definitely. I feel like punk and metal and hard rock is very connected to my love of horror. I have a feeling maybe you guys know what I mean. And
No idea. Never.
like you want, like a spicy meatball, right? Like you need your art to be like intense. Right. And like sometimes you feel good when like you need to feel bad in order to feel good, and you need to feel like the catharsis of pity and fear that there are other people out there that feel
100%
like intense or angry or like you know, all of the stuff that goes into all of those genres. And you know, and I've worked in the sex industry and worked in porn, so like I kind of the like making sci-fi and horror does feel similar to making porn in the sense that it's like, okay, I already know what it means to like work in this genre that is about like eliciting responses from people's bodies, right? Mm-hmm. You want them mm-hmm. to scream, you want them to come.
Yeah.
Really, you mentioned tear jerkers, right? It's like, right. It's all the same.
it is.
And it's really about fluids, getting the fluids out.
The magic of making art that is about fluid extraction.
Yeah. Right?
Well, you haven't seen Dune 2 yet, but there's some fluid extraction in Dune.
That's why the popcorn bucket looks the way that it does.
That's right. The popcorn bucket. I want to get my hands on one of those. It was hard work, but it was also like juicy and exciting work. And some of the best advice that I've ever gotten about writing comics is coming up against moments where I'm like, well, I don't know like why this scene would need to have like a smoke bomb go off. And, you know, I've gotten advice that's like, it's a comic. It needs to look cool, right? Like sometimes like the best decision making in this kind of storytelling is what's going to be fucking cool. And and it, you know, all of the things that I've learned about fiction writing, like the arcs of character dynamics and characters need to learn and grow and, you know, like rising action and denouement, like, all, you know, all of that stuff, putting characters before plot machinations, like all of that. Yes. And it's really important for comic books to be fucking cool. So you like, I do spend like a lot of time. I mean, even like listening to this podcast and listening to other like movie and even specifically horror podcasts and like just listening to recaps and listening to like, I find that like very soothing. That's like what I do when I'm like doing the dishes or walking the dog, and I'll like listen to podcasts about movies that I've seen and podcasts about movies that I haven't gotten around to seeing, or podcasts about movies that I like probably will never get around to seeing, but like listening to people talk about them and even the way that they recap them and seeing like, what do people remember about like causal relationships and like the consequence of this led to that. And this moment is so iconic, or this moment resonated with me in this way. Then I just kind of like take notes and like rip off not necessarily the source material, but what people have had to say, all of which is to say that like I'm a fan. I have actual conversations, not just passive conversations of listening to podcasts, but podcasts, you know, are an efficient way of having conversations with mm-hmm. a lot of different people. And kind of seeing like what brings people pleasure. And that's like ultimately what a lot of these genres are about. It's definitely what horror is about for me. Obviously, it sounds counterintuitive to people who aren't horror fans, but like to me, like why would you watch things that are disgusting if it wasn't like for how pleasurable it is if you're a sicko?
Yeah, in some fashion.
Yeah, I mean, like, right? but you know, but there is like, I mean, I think most of the most gory stuff is actually kind of hilarious. I find comedy in most of it, but I'm also very good at separating like art and real life. You know what I mean? Like real life murder.
I gotta work on that.
Mostly lame. I'm not saying all murders are lame, but I'm gonna say.
I grew up on Rotten.com, dude. They're not all lame. There's some that are fucking brutal.
But I'm just saying though. But like when I watch something like one of my recommendations, I'll talk about it later. But like when I watch something and they come up with an idea, I was watching an old movie. I'll just say it now. I was watching The Blob, like the newest.
On my recommendation.
Really? Yeah, I just watched The Blob. I watched The Blob the other day.
That's so weird.
Me too.
That's so weird. So random. But at one point, The Blob has this dude, and the woman that he's with grabs his arm and then pulls it back, and like the arm like kind of like pulls out of the thing, and you're just
so
like,
good.
You're like, that is so cool. Like, it's just cool. So I fully get what you're saying. It's like, I need to take those little things. It's like when he, like in The Fly, when he like with the compound fracture in The Fly, it's so cool. But why is that cool?
It's so funny that you say that. That moment, there's so many moments in The Fly that are, you know, the pinnacle of body horror, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. like monstrosity and the sci-fi stuff, and obviously the like agony of the relationship, and you know, even the like dream about the baby. But when I saw, I mean, this is why I'm like this. Watched so many disgusting movies when I was way too young for a variety of reasons that we could get into if you want, but like I latchkey kid mostly is the explanation. But the arm wrestling scene scared me so much, and I always feel embarrassed by that because it feels kind of like the least.
No, because it's the
realest. It's not really like supernatural. I mean, he has super strength, but it's like it's not it. Like, and I actually have much more of a taste for the supernatural, like, in my heart. Like, I prefer horror to thrillers in general, by which I mean, like stuff with, like, weird science and magic and monsters. But, yeah, maybe it was just that I wasn't expecting it. I don't know. But what makes that so memorable to you?
I want to jump into this really quick just because this is something that reminded me of it.
Yeah.
And I think you guys can all kind of understand what I'm saying on this. There's a time, I think, in everybody's horror gestation period, I guess is the best way to put it. The young years when you're watching horror movies, and there's that one time where you remember being like, fuck yeah. Like, there's just that one time you see that one scene, the first one, like, or an early one where you just like, yes, like that was just like the cool thing. Mine was the movie Demon Knight from Tales from the Crypt. Oh. And it was specifically when Billy Zane punched a hole through the cop's head. And I was in the theater, and I remember like being with my friends. I actually stood up and went, fuck yeah, like, and my friend was just like, holy shit, like that was amazing. And then the rest of the movie was just like the coolest roller coaster ride ever, and it stuck in my head forever because I was like, that was the first time that I truly got like that jolt of like, holy shit, in a horror movie. Cause I got scared when I was younger when I watched like Exorcist and stuff like that, but that was the first one that was just like, yes, like it was the cool thing that happened in a horror movie.
I think that breaking somebody's arm like that, though, like a compound fracture, is just kind of cool. You know what I mean? And like, I mean, like, it's like one of those things that like went around when we were kids, like pre-internet, like you could hit somebody's nose up into their brain, or you could like, you know what I mean? Like, you could like, it was just like one of those things. It's like, there's just something about compound fractures in general, which are like, like so graphic and so like
if you've if you you've even heard about them or never heard about them, they're gonna shock you no matter what the first time you see it.
Yeah.
And then also in that movie, it is sort of the first pop. Like it's like the first part of the pun, but it's like the first, like he's just kind of going through it. And then he right. walks into the bar and he's kind of acting an ass. And like, and then he just like, hey, it's rad when like little dudes own bullies. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of cool. Like, so there's that element of it. And it's just like, I, all of my art, my comedy, everything is based on, we're going to get real deep here real quick. Is on an artist called Andrew Goldsworthy. If you're anybody's familiar with him, he does like nature art, but anyways, he takes like rocks and he'll cover them in like red leaves in the middle of a river and, or like bright yellow leaves. And it's just like just the one thing in the middle of the thing. And you just put that one weird offset thing and it becomes like this focal point around like really normal. And so I think the effectiveness of that was that everything else up until that point was pretty normal. And I mean, like there definitely was like like they were definitely pulling back the rubber band of tension with him acting it. And that like literally, like part of the pun again, snapped the rubber band. You know what I mean? It was just like, he just like, and then a bone sticking through some jackass's arm. Fantastic.
I remember. I was just going to say, we always remember a compound fracture. Like,
it's, yeah, I remember memorable. Seeing The Fly, the first horror movie I ever saw. And I remember the image that really, it was Poltergeist. And it wasn't the clown or the tree or anything. It was the maggot meat. And that shit, I could never get out of my head. And just the disgust and everything, like, I loved it. But it was also the first time I saw that movie. I was hiding behind my parents' couch while they watched it. They didn't know I was watching it.
So elusive. And
so the crime aspect was very, very much why I also got into horror, I think. But I saw The Fly very young, too. And I didn't remember anything except that scene. Like, the compound fracture, I remember being horrified by. And then not really much else. I saw it years later and realized that it was an incredible movie, start to finish. One of the best, maybe the best remake of all time. But that's very debatable.
And Drew was, by the way, do dress like Gina Davis in that movie. You know, we're always showing up to interview people in leather skirts.
Yes.
Right.
Of course, yeah. It's very period appropriate. Well, I was going to say, like, even with the compound fracture thing, that's even true up until modern day, because think about the Saw franchise. One of the most legendary traps in the entire fucking franchise is the rack. And the rack, to this day, makes my skin crawl. Every time I see that trap, I've seen it at least 10 times at this point, and it's still... like, it still makes me just go, oh, like, it's just, it's one of those ones. There's no way to get around it. Like, you put a compound fracture in a horror movie, they're going to remember the movie. Like, even if it's a shit movie, they're going to be like, I remember that part.
I guess it's the kind of thing where it sometimes is scarier if it could happen to you.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, and that's maybe the engine of all of the Saw traps, is sort of contemplating like which one would you be able to survive.
Yeah.
I'm not surviving any of them, because I'm just gonna be like, all right. Yeah, we're good. Like, I don't need
this
to.
This seems complicated.
like, you know what? Like, I'm going to get out of here. I'm
very tired. You drugged me with something. I don't know. I'm right, out of my top.
You want me to cut into my eye? We're good. Like,
dude, if I walked into a room with a pit full of hypodermic needles and they were like, hey, your antidote's in there, I was like, I'm going to break my own fucking neck right now. Like, I'm done. Like, sorry, guys. Your trap didn't work. I'm out.
So one other piece of advice that I wanted to give about writing comics, mm-hmm. if you have been struggling to make that transition, is that it has a very comforting, speaking of Saw, this is my segue, is Saw, the Saw 10 and counting now, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, the Saw movies have a very comforting structure. Again, if you're a sicko. And writing comics has a very comforting structure as well, where, you know, everybody does it differently, but the way that I learned is you're essentially writing a script, right? So you're writing like a play or a teleplay, a screenplay. And I've learned to do it where you actually write what is in every panel, right? And so like on page one, we'll preview for your listeners. Well, not for the people who are just listening on the podcast. You can't see this, but you know, so this would be page one, panel one. And I would describe like, okay, a beach at sunset and there are fancy people in fancy dresses chatting. And then, you know, I'll say caption. And when did you realize you were in too deep?
Right.
And then this panel will be page one, panel two. And then I'll describe, you know, this like person writhing in pain and, you know, and it's all about your relationship with as a writer, it's about your relationship with artists. Like I've worked on books where I didn't know who the artist was going to be when I was writing the script. So in that case, I'm just trying to be as specific as possible about the things that matter to me. And then as encouraging as possible to the artist to put their own spin on it. And that's always the important balance for me is like
getting a good tattoo.
Yeah. That's such a good comparison. Yes. You want to be specific about what you care about. And then also trust the craft of the person that you're collaborating with or hiring with a tattoo. A tattoo is a collaboration, right? Because you're the raw material that they're working with.
That's true.
But yeah, and so the fact that you are describing everything that is in every panel that you really need to be there, or even kind of like making suggestions. And so in this case, I knew that I was writing the script for Lisa Stroll to draw. So I would even have a sort of like second person address sometimes, like in the description. I'd be like, Lisa, I really wanted to, I'm going to put this thing on the mood board from this environment to look at. And sometimes that's a reference to a movie. And sometimes it's a reference to a specific place in a way that will be helpful to like literally illustrate like what the abstraction that I'm thinking in my head. But then sometimes I'll literally say, Lisa, I'm going to leave this up to you. Like what kinds of like moves you want in this fight scene, or like, what do you think this character should look like? You know, sometimes I have strong feelings about what characters should look like. And, and sometimes I'm like, what do you think? And I find that kind of structure really liberating in a way. It's like bondage as freedom. It's like when you it makes it so that if your mind is all over the place with like, what could these characters be doing, and what could this world be like, and what could the story be like, and what are the references, and what are we paying homage to, and all these different things, like when you have to kind of like mix up that batter in your head and then pour it into a specific tin, it helps to like give it form.
That makes sense.
I'm not a baker, that's really great. So I don't
No, it makes perfect sense. That makes perfect
sense. Incredible advice, actually.
Yeah, it's a great, that's a great explanation for that, because it's I mean, because for me, coming from the writing standpoint, like that collaboration just sounds fantastic. And like
I also have a red light.
So
awesome. You don't have to turn on the red light.
But I also feel like, you know, I'm just so used to describing everything while writing that it's like, you know what I mean? And like, using exposition and using like those things, it's like, well, where would I put this? But it's just strictly dialogue and trying to think about that. It's just an interesting challenge for me as a you know what I mean. It's just a different mindset.
I think also one of my friends, small and scaling, you know, like not trying to write a whole graphic novel, but see, like, can you write a short story?
Right. Sure.
One of my friends that he does scripting for animated series. And he said, when he was talking to me about that, this is kind of what it sounds similar to me, is that he said when he's presenting something like a script for an animated series, when he storyboards it, he's essentially writing and producing what looks to be like comic book panels for this thing, which is really an outline. But within that outline, he has to be incredibly detailed about these things that are going into this chapter and this part and this thing and not like that. So everything that he's writing out and, you know, storyboarding out for these producers or for anybody that's going to potentially invest in these things is very much like a comic book. And then when he looks at it, he's like, fuck me, I wrote a comic book. You know, like he's like, if it doesn't work out as an animated series, I just wrote a comic book.
What do you got coming up next? What's your DeepRog still going? What do you got?
Yeah, so DeepRog issue one comes out March 20th, 2024, then there are four issues in this first story arc, and so from March to June there will be an issue out every month, and then it will be collected in a trade paperback like we were talking about earlier, and that'll be out in September 2024. But you know, for comic book fans, calling your local comic book store and asking them to put DeepRog in your pull list is really great. It's great for indie publishers. It's especially great to show support for, you know, this is an all woman and, you know, largely queer like creative team. So like, you know, get the woke mind virus and support us. And then, yeah, Why Are People Into That is my podcast that is about like fetish sex and lots of other pervy stuff. So you can listen to that wherever you pod. And there's definitely some stuff in there that is relevant to horror fans. I have some, you know, as I have established, I'm a sicko, and thus I have sicko friends. And there's a podcast about people who are actually like erotically into being vampires, and there's a very popular podcast about cannibalism and like boar fetishism. So I feel like listeners of another goddamn horror podcast would appreciate that. And then Why Are People Into That is the nonfiction book based on the podcast. Yeah, there's a whole chapter on cannibalism, like erotic cannibalism in the book. So that is going to be out in June 2024. And I don't know, I've got some other stuff cooking, but those are the big things.
I love it. I think there's also like one of the things that you were just talking about. I think there's a big actual like middle ground between fetish and horror. Like, as far as like both fans of it and people that, you know, are into those things. And like, I have a lot of friends that are sex workers that are specifically into fetish, that are specifically into a variety of different things of that whole, you know, that whole whatever you want to call it, subgenre community. Of sex work. Yeah community and like, yeah, that whole culture. And I can say with pretty good confidence that all of them have at least some interest in the horror genre of film. And I think that a lot of that stuff also, I think the people that are attracted to both of those things are also, like I said before, bedfellows. Like those are a lot of the same people. Like, you know, we love them. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we totally dungeon fellows.
Back bed fellows. Yeah.
New York also has a big kink community, a very, very big one. And it's also funny too, because New York has the kind of kink community that I think San Francisco used to have, in the sense that like, it's not out in the open, but once you find it, it's out in the open. Like once you find it, it's there. But yeah, it's great. It's a good culture. It's a good community, and more power to you for it.
Absolutely.
We could talk to you all day about all these things.
So many things.
Yeah, because DeepRog is rad, and anything cult related is really, anything cult related is always really exciting. And deprogramming of cults. What is that movie with Harvey Keitel where he's a
The Jane Campion movie. what the fuck is it called? Holy Smoke.
Holy Smoke. That's right. Yeah. It is a weird fucking movie, but it's, it is, yeah, he's a deprogrammer.
I just love the idea and concept of somebody who is going around deprogramming cult members.
Faults
in general.
Faults
just
is my favorite
that.
Deprogramming movie. Have you seen Faults?
Yeah.
Faults. Is that the one with, it like mostly takes place in a hotel room?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Phenomenal actress.
Absolutely love that movie. One of my favorites. It's done by a bunch of the people that did, I think You're Next and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been the same writer. Yeah.
Cool.
Do you think you could handle our Sinister Six questions? You think you can? You think?
Now that I have my red light. I think that I'm ready.
I think
that, yeah, the atmosphere is right.
All
right,
perfect.
All right, here we go. Number one, Chucky or Pinhead?
For what?
Just whatever.
It's like, who do you choose?
Your choice.
Who's your favorite?
Oh, Pinhead with a bolt, with a pin, with a hook, with a grappling hook. Yeah, yeah.
Chain hook. Okay,
with the box.
With a box, yeah. Very easy to solve, Le Marchand's box.
A real difficult
Everyone's
one.
Always like, and then, you know, if you could possibly figure out this esoteric thing, and yet always it just kind of like clicks into
everybody seems to figure it out pretty easy.
It's literally the world's shittiest Rubik's Cube. It's just like...
No, I'm a huge Pinhead fan, and I love the description of Pinhead in the Hellbound Heart that is like way, to be honest, like way gayer than the movie, even though they're both, you know, the creations of Clive Barker, who's an out queer man, but that like Pinhead's pins have like jewels on the end of them in the book. I'm like, that's a look
fancy.
A bedazzled hell priest.
I love it.
I can't do dolls. That's like an actual creepy. I mean, I love Bride of Chucky. I love Jennifer Tilly. But you were asking specifically about Chucky. So yeah, that's an easy one. That's Pinhead for me.
I don't know if it's true, but I just literally just like yesterday saw pictures of Jennifer Tilly, and apparently she carries a little Chucky doll with her wherever she goes. Yep. She actually she it's her deal. Like there's a picture of her. She's like her
dad and poker.
Like she deal. Like it sits next to her, like on the plane. Like she buys it a seat. Yeah, it's wild.
Love it. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Number two, is Bigfoot real?
Yeah, why not?
I really want Bigfoot to be real, to be honest.
Yeah, the truth is out there. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, Bigfoot has divested from society, and like, who among us?
Honestly.
Just for real.
I want Bigfoot to just be a big hairy dude that's just like scared of everybody else. He's just like chilling out in the forest. He's like, I don't fucking like those people. I'm out here.
Like, right, exactly.
Family of
my own little shack. We're good.
What movie would you remake?
Oh shit. That is such a good question. Oh no.
It can be anything.
It's not as easy as, yeah.
I should have thought of this more ahead of time.
You wouldn't want to skip ahead and think about it?
No, I have an answer. It's not a horror movie, although it has some intense elements to it. Does it have to be a horror movie?
Nope.
No.
Okay. Nope. Have you guys seen The Apartment by Billy Wilder?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you guys have like wide-ranging taste. I fucking love that movie. And I think that it's a rare romantic comedy that is both romantic and funny. Mm-hmm. But it's also quite dark, and I have had an idea for a not a remake, but a sort of inspired by reimagining of that story that I won't give too much away, but if I ever make it, then you guys can say you got the scoop first. Because I've watched it many times since I was a little kid, and like I said, latchkey kid, and I rewatched it in like deep quarantine and was like, this is just a movie about work-life balance and like boundaries. and I feel like that's very relevant to our times. So
for sure.
Yeah. I have an idea about a modern remake of The Apartment, and Shirley MacLaine is highly bangable in that movie. I'll just put that out there.
Do you like a lot of like, because that movie came out, what, like 1959,
69.
Yeah. Do you like a lot of movies from that era? Are you like a classics fan or?
I am. I would say that my, if I had to choose a favorite decade of film, I mean, it would have to be the 90s, because that's when I was a teenager, and so that's when I was, you know,
sure,
inhaling the most pop culture, and also that was the era of DVDs with multiple commentary tracks, mm-hmm. which was the original podcast. But I love the 70s a lot, but yeah, I guess I'm a little bit more discerning about pre-1969 films, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that I love.
Yeah, I could tell a little bit you got a little noir to Deep Rock. Yeah. So like there's a noir element to it, so I could that's hence the question. Are you I could get absolutely. a little
no, I've done my homework for sure. I've watched all of that old super dark and cynical stuff, but yeah. I also love like The Grifters. Have you guys seen The Grifters?
That was the
book, the Jim Thompson book is great. That was a big influence. I mean, I think that I'm actually not that into like true crime or like a lot of like, I don't like Law and Order that much. I know Law and Order is not true crime, or is it? I don't know, but I'm not that big a fan of like realism generally in, mm-hmm. In fiction or film or TV, but, I do really, there's something about noir or even like neo-noir, like Blood Simple, Coen mm-hmm. stuff, that there's always just like one thing that happens that is kind of like an entire Saw movie in one moment, where someone's like, where'd you get that scar? And it's like, oh, well, you know, I was like skimming a little off the top. And so then, you know, I had to like, I was like chained to a radiator for 24 hours or like something shit like that. And you just kind of have to like stop the movie or stop, like put down the book, comic could be like a while, and then it like haunts. And you're like, oh, sure. Again, like this is why you're like this. So that's what I'm always thriving to elicit in my readers is just sort of like, oh God, that's so depraved.
Oh I love it.
Yeah, I love that feeling.
Oh, you're my
favorite. It's the best feeling. You guys would. Yeah, we're like-minded here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be? Doesn't have to be horror. This is our most passed on, because we either get like, I can't think of one, or I don't want to do that to another artist, or we have people that have like 10 in their back pocket ready to go.
They're just like, fuck that movie.
It's interesting. I'm finding myself thinking of a lot of bands that I would erase from existence, which is kind of cheating.
Oh, one no. I'd love to.
One of them is definitely 311.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You can really get rid of 311.
Sorry, dude. Amber is clearly not the color of your energy.
This is what's that song about I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch? Do you guys remember that?
God. Oh, yeah. I know the next line, actually.
And I know that I the like band's, it starts with an L.
It starts with an L.
LFO. It's LFO.
Is it LFO?
I would like
to. I like girls that wear Abercrombie. Chinese food makes me sick. That was the next fucking line. And I was fuck that band.
For some reason, like, TV is coming to mind. Like, like Dawson's Creek. I wish
another one.
Friends. I can't believe that the kids are into Friends.
I'm so happy you said that. I hate that show so much.
Yeah, I hated it then. I hate it now. It's,
Well, let's move on from this question. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
You're just ruining all of Graham's stuff. Just like,
well, I don't love Friends or anything, but 311 I do love. unironically, they're fun. I saw them. They were one of the first bands I saw live after I got sober, and they fucking killed it. And Matsuyasu opened up for them. And I was like, who is... I thought he was this Jewish guy, but it was like this... Like, he was a surfer now.
Modest Yahoo fucking rules, though.
You know what else that is fun, fucking Graham? Rules. You know what else is fun? Huffing gas. But, like, I would strongly suggest not doing it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there comes a time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, anyways. 311, huffing gas.
All right. Whatever.
Make your
decision. We're moving on. All right, Midsommar or Hereditary?
Shit, I really, I'm such an Ari Aster head. I really love them both. I think that Hereditary is a perfect movie. But if I had to choose, I would choose Midsommar, partially because it's definitely in the cult genre, the folk horror genre, absolutely influential on D Prague. And something about that movie has just always delighted me and stuck with me. You know, I'm such a sucker. A24 released these ceramic incense holders that look like the temple at the end of Midsommar.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Midsommar, but let's just say there's a fire at the end of the movie, and so you can like light incense and then that's rad. Oh, that's your shirt.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Me and Graham both have like the extended Midsommar edition thing that's like 3.5 hours.
It's one of my favorite movies.
I saw that in the theater it twice in the theater, and I just I'm totally that girl that's like, let's watch a comfort film. And it's Midsommar. I got the incense holder. I got to see, they have the dress, the May Queen dress at the Academy Museum out here.
Oh, wow.
So I got to see that. That was rad. Speaking of freaks, I love that Ari Aster. Beau is Afraid, like.
Amazing.
Chef's fucking kiss on that one.
Yeah, the ultimate blank check, right?
It was pure insanity.
Beau's Afraid is hilarious because somebody asked me, what is Beau's Afraid about? And I said, his name is Beau, and he's afraid of everything that's in the movie. It's like, that's what it is. And they were just, and then they watched it and they came back and they were like, fuck me if you weren't right. And I was like, that's literally what it is. He's afraid of the
Parker
whole
thing. Posey in that movie, just.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. But okay, if I had to choose one Ari Aster, it would be Midsommar. I love that movie so much.
I think I personally want to join that cult. Because
they have some good points.
I throw old people off cliffs already. You know what I mean? And so I throw a boomer off a cliff every chance I get. So like if there is
Yeah, you can hear them actually in the director's cut saying, okay, boomer.
Exactly.
It's great.
Yeah.
So, like, can I complain?
For legal purposes, Ryan has had zero chances to throw any old white people off of a cliff. But if he had them...
He's had chances.
If you look, actually, I don't know with the red light, if you can see it in DeepRog, but we did, Lisa Stirl and I had some fun putting some of our cult favorites in the background of... you know, part of the pleasure of setting it in a video store is having, you know, VHS books in the background. So we, there's a few clues to some of the later sort of taboo themes in some of this, but we've got Suspiria, Society, mm-hmm. Wicker Man, oh. Obviously the original. And then in the, oh yeah, you can see right here. Let's see if you can see it. In the background of Tate's office, you can see the poster of Midsommar.
Oh, that's great. Yes. That's rad.
I love it.
Yeah, one of our earlier guests was Brian Yuzna from, and we talked about Society. That was quite a interview.
Oh yeah, I heard that. I listened to that episode right away. My God.
We literally just let him talk. We were just talking. We're shut the fuck up, and you get to take it to school.
What an incredible film. I like to subject as many people to it as possible. I'm like, it's a social critique of, you know, of the upper classes, and people are like, you know, again, pushes Monocle up on him.
Exactly. Yeah. This is really art. Here's the
and then when everybody monster. Like, just see it, their monocle pops out in shock and disgust.
Yeah,
exactly. I love it.
Is that a collection of people's buttholes? Is that what that is? Among other things, yes.
All right, last one. Basement or attic?
Well, you know, I have, I'm allergic to mold. So I think I would have to prefer the, I mean, I know that attics can get moldy, but.
Not like a basement can.
Not like a basement can.
No.
Yeah. And I think I would feel, I mean, if the question is, where would I run in a house to get away from being chased? There's, I mean, I guess probably basement is a better option because there might be like a door or a window, or like a storm hatch or something, or you might keep looking for a place to run to, and then you've got a barbarian situation going on.
Ooh,
and
that's true.
I would rather defenestrate out of the out of the attic than end up in that situation. I'm a little claustrophobic, so obviously you can get claustrophobic in an attic. Lots of speaking of Hereditary, lots of bad things can happen in an attic.
Yeah.
But
your mom could saw her head off with a piano wire.
Exactly. You might even not notice that it's happening for a few seconds.
Right, man. until you hear that thump.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is you killed the Sinister Six, by the way.
Fantastic.
Which I had
so much fun.
I had no doubt in my mind.
No. One of the other questions was, I switched it up because the other one was Alien or Aliens, but I felt you'd have a better answer to Midsommar and Hereditary.
I appreciate that. I'm more interested in haunted houses than war. So I'm
an alien
guy for sure. Yeah. I'm also just more, I mean, there's a little bit of this in every Alien movie, but and we already talked about this a little bit with The Fly, but I'm very interested in like pregnancy and birth horror because I'm just so grateful to horror for convincing me at an early age that I never wanted to give birth. I was just like, yeah, no, that's not for me. Seems like it would be like that.
Have you ever, Tina, have you ever seen the movie Anything for Jackson?
No.
Right? You should definitely check that out.
Yeah.
That's not even a recommendation of mine for like our recommendations. I'm just saying you should specifically watch that movie because it's one of the earlier like Shudder exclusive Shudder original movies. And to this day, it's probably one of the most fucked up Shudder exclusive original type of things that I've seen, and it's still every, even after a rewatch, you know, multiple times, it's still wild and it's very well done. And it goes along with the whole pregnancy and also a little culty and a little bit of all that stuff.
Oh my God. Firing it up. Thank you.
Yeah, it's super good. All right. Go for it, Jonas. Since you already are recommending things, why don't you go
ahead and might as well. So physical media, I'm going to recommend the Warlock collection because you can get it on Amazon right now for a really good price. And I miss Julian Sands, and the Warlock movies fucking rule. They're solid movies. And he, especially as the Warlock in the first two, is fucking amazing. Like, he's sultry, he's demonic, he's all the things that you would expect a warlock to be. So yeah, that's the physical media one. I just went to a concert and saw Kim Dracula, Jairus Johnson, and Tala all at Irving Plaza. It was only the second show of the tour, so they still have a full tour across the United States. It's one of the best shows that I've seen in a long time. Like, that show was 3 hours long, and I don't fucking do 3 hour concerts anymore. I haven't done that in 10 years because I'm old now. I just don't do that shit. But from beginning to end, it was amazing. And Kim Dracula has one of the biggest presences on stage that I've ever seen. Absolutely fucking rules. So if you can catch that concert, definitely catch it. So that's going to be my music recommendation. As far as streaming goes, keeping with the theme of the show and the theme of D-Prog and cults and everything like that, I'm going to re-recommend a movie that I still don't hear enough people talk about. That is the movie Apostle on Netflix. It's a cult movie starring Dan Stevens and other people as well, but Dan Stevens fucking rules
in it. Great Dan Stevens.
Dude, it's one of those movies that, like, you know how some movies have like sound engineering during certain scenes where the sound of a scene will stick with you? There's a scene in there where, and it has a drill. It's a very archaic, very old drill. And the sound engineering alone in that scene, even though the scene is horrifying, just the sound will stick with you for a long time. But it's also well acted. It's got a really cool take on the cult thing. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I believe that that's going to be it.
Bram.
All right. I got, I finally finished Fever House by Keith Ross. It's fucking better than I expected. I can't believe there's a second book coming. I am so excited for that. I'm going to skip this one because I think Ryan's going to talk about it.
Go ahead. I got other stuff.
Well, I'll say it on the last one, and then you can take over. I saw the Long Weekend, 1978 Australian movie.
Yeah,
it fucking rules. My friend had told me about it. I had never heard of it, but I've been really into Australian movies lately. Old horror. I'm trying to go back and like work from the beginning up. And this was the latest one, and it's so good. It's about like a couple that's pretty much on the brink of divorce. They're not doing well. So to go to try to help out their relationship, they go camping near a beach in the middle of Australia, I guess. And it's basically they treat the environment pretty shitty. You know, like one of the first scenes is he tosses a cigarette butt out the window. It starts a little fire. He chops trees for no reason, just partially. There's trash everywhere. And Mother Nature's like, fuck that shit. And it's pretty awesome. So watch that. It's on YouTube, actually. You can just watch it for free.
I actually saw you comment that you'd been looking for that for months, and I was like, shit, I can find that. And then I found it on YouTube, and I was just like, here you go, buddy.
did the exact same thing. Like, I woke up the next day, they're like, here, I found it for you. I was like, you guys fucking rule. So that was great. Music wise, Couch Slut. They are angry, depressive, noise rock, hardcore band from New York, but they have less in common with Unsane and like Swans than they do like with Jesus Lizard. I saw them once a few years ago and wasn't as familiar until after I saw them at. I forget. I think they were opening up for like World Impact or something. But anyway, that's not even the name of the band, but it doesn't matter. The Megan Ostracitz, the lead singer, is just this disheveled, angry woman, just like screaming through the crowd. She spends no time on the stage. And it's so fucking cathartic feeling and amazing. And so are their records. They've got a new album coming out this year and the single's out. It's called Ode to Jimbo. It fucking rules. Check out Couch Slut. And the other movie I was going to talk about was The Blob, 1988.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Yeah, Blob 1988.
It's so fucking good.
It's so good. It's so good. It's so, so gory. Good. It's so such beautiful effects. Like, it's just really great. Watch it.
Kevin, they kill kids.
They kill straight up kill kids.
They straight up murk those kids.
Kevin Dillon's in it. He's great.
Paul Wild. Shawnee Smith.
Johnny Smith's in it.
Love Shawnee Smith.
Paul McCain, who is, I'm a RoboCop guy, and he is the famous toxic waste dude in RoboCop. He is also in that. So yeah, 1988's The Blob, like such a VCR rental for me, and then I saw it the other day, and I was just like, God, it's so good, and it's like, and I watched it with my partner, and her and I were like, God, this is just so still so good, and it's just
so solid as hell.
So monster movie, you know, but it's like it's still got violence. It's great. It's awesome. So,
it's like the most Cronenberg movie that's not Cronenberg.
Yeah, it's really, you
know what I mean? And it's like, anti-government. So
anti-government. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Go to Shudder right now. Watch Satanic Hispanics if you haven't. Yes. I have the physical media right here, but Satanic Hispanics is one of our favorite. Every single anthology in it is awesome. I love them all.
Yeah,
so good. Even one from friend of the show, Gigi Sal Guerrero, coolest.
Nahuales. That was hers.
Yep, so it's so good. And she's so great. And so yeah, Satanic
Cooler Hispanic, than all of us.
Yep, on Shudder. I was glad to see it actually get streaming. Real quick, Carpet Fitters versus Cannibals I watched. That's super fun. I've seen it forever, seen it advertised forever, never watched it. It's great.
What is it?
Carpet Fitters versus Cannibals. It's super fun. It's on one of them. It's just a brutal kind of fun
all
Scottish movie, I think.
Yeah, it's a Scottish movie.
Yeah, Scottish. Carpenter Fitters versus Cannibals, really great. The Andres Breivik three-part series on Last Podcast on the Left is amazing because it shows white supremacists as the lazy, shitty, coward dick bags that they are. That they aren't monsters, that they're just cowards and gross fools who play World of Warcraft so much that they have no real life. The song Twist of Cain by Danzig. And
I love that song.
And lastly, because I hadn't heard it in a long time and I just played it the other day and I was like, oh, this song is so good. It's off his first album too. So and then lastly, I've been watching Tournament of Champions on Max, which is Guy Fieri's, like, with all the really best chefs. And I had almost a crying moment. Chef was having a really hard time with anxiety and Guy pulled him aside and talked to him. And I was like, I got a little choked up.
Guy's a good guy.
Yeah, I was I got a little choked up, and I was like, man, like I haven't been like choked up in a while, and so I'm deciding to recommend Tournament of Champions. I've watched all the seasons of it as an ex restaurant guy myself. Great food coming out on Tournament of Champions. Tina, what do you got?
Okay, I wrote all of these down while we were talking. I just finished it's called My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Atessa Moshfegh. You guys read it?
I have not.
Have you read anything by her?
I have not, but somebody who I really trust actually just recommended me that probably about 4 weeks ago. So yeah,
so the first book of hers that I read is called Eileen, and by the way, that was adapted into a movie that came out last year that I feel like didn't get any buzz, but was quite good as adaptations go. And there's a lot of both the book and the movie Eileen are a lot of tension and then like one really shocking twist that has kind of a twist within it, if I can tease that. And it really, my friend Katie Skelly, who's a great comic book artist writer, told me that she thought that I should read Eileen because it's a feel bad book for freaks. And I was like, okay, I guess you've read me. but it really is. And it's really, I feel like Moshfegh's work is kind of about how girls are gross. Like girls are underrated in terms of like being the most disgusting. So it took me a year to feel like I was ready to read another one of her books because they are quite intense. And our year, why do I keep saying that? My year of, I obviously identified with the narrator. My year of rest and relaxation is, really sort of mundane horror. Really well written. Highly recommend that. Let's see. A couple of other books. Just finished The Seep. Have you guys heard of that one?
Heard of it. I haven't seen it yet, though.
I think I have
it. No, it's a book. It's a book.
I think I have it somewhere, but I haven't read it yet. Yeah.
It surprised me at first. I thought it was going to be like a Jeff Vandermeer kind of story. Right. And then it almost ended up being more like a Douglas Adams book. Huh. It was very like satirical. A strange kind of almost like a little bit like Octavia Butler, but then very satirical. And I really enjoyed that.
But it looks really good. Yeah,
it's good. It's quite crushable too. Like strange. It's unlike any other alien invasion story that I've ever read. So that one's fun. Our Wives Under the Sea, I just finished. That is also a very tension building, creepy, beautifully written book about what the fuck is at the bottom of the ocean. Really recommend that.
Wait, what was that one called?
Our Wives Under the Sea. And then another book, bringing it a little bit back to Deprog and cults. I really want to shout out this anthology of nonfiction about cults called American Cult that was put out by Silver Sprocket. There's a lot of really, I mean, speaking of true crime, if you want to, part of the reason that I wanted to make a series about cults that, you know, we've written one story arc and hopefully we'll get a chance to write more, because I just feel like anything that you can think of that is a weird thing that humans might believe and do to each other in the name of belief, like fucked up people have probably already thought of it and done it in some way. And the thing that's really scary about cults is that no one is immune from the psychological draw of cults, because it's all about these basic human needs like belonging and identity. And American Cult is really dark and really wonderful book about like the specific American nature of belief and the fucked up things that we will do to each other. So highly recommend that. And now you guys have inspired me to talk about music a bit. I was trying to think of a band that maybe folks haven't heard of. And a band that I know from back in my day in Santa Cruz and like the psych rock scene when I lived there like 20 years ago, this band called Mammatus, that is a very heavy psych rock band, stoner rock, and they put out a new record and toured recently, and it was nice to feel like I need to do my stretches before I headbang now.
Yeah, I literally have a sore neck still.
More than I did. Yeah, bang over. But it was, man, it was so beautiful to see those guys. If you like, like heavy, moody, psychedelic rock, I recommend Mammatus. And if you guys are down with a recommendation of another horror podcast,
of course, okay. Yeah.
There's plenty of room for everyone at the top, right?
Right, damn right.
I've got some friends who do this podcast called Progressively Horrified, where their tagline is holding horror to progressive politics that it never agreed to. They're so great, and they have such great takes on like recent horror movies and old horror movies. And I've been on a few times. I just went on to do an episode about Bones and All that just came out. And I did an episode about Midsommar actually, and It Follows. And so, I definitely, for folks who enjoy this podcast, I recommend Progressively Horrified. That's it for me.
Awesome.
And D-Prog, of course. Yeah, and why are people into that?
Yes. Yes.
That's coming out on March 20th, you said, right?
That's right.
Awesome.
Also, I forgot to say, I wrote it down, I didn't say it. I am rereading Slaughterhouse-5 because I got So It Goes tattooed on my knuckles. So I'm rereading Slaughterhouse-5.
So It Goes was my senior quote.
I knew we'd be friends. I like it because it sounds all nice and fluffy, but it also implies somebody died.
If you know.
I recommend read Slaughterhouse-5. It's a great book. Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut and Joan Didion are my are the word masters.
I got invited to speak a few years ago at the Kurt Vonnegut Library in Indianapolis. Oh, they did like they were doing a week about like censorship in literature, because obviously Vonnegut was censored quite a bit. And so I did a talk about Lolita, and they screened Naked Lunch, and it was a great time. They're definitely like keeping the spirit of Vonnegut and everything that he represents alive out there. And
that's awesome.
Middle of fucking nowhere.
Awesome. Good.
No offense, Indianapolis.
But... No. Middle of fucking nowhere. No. So.
We could just talk to you forever. You are our people, and thank you so much for making time for us and for putting out the art that you're putting out. It's absolutely fantastic, and it makes me very, very excited to see great people making great things and keeping art real and alive. And so thank you for doing that and being part of that, because it's so crucial. So
thank you so much for saying that, and thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, of course. And I want to thank all of our worldwide listeners. America still in first place. United Kingdom still solidly in second place. Canada coming in strong. We were actually all last week, we were at like 20th on the film interview charts in Canada all week. We've dipped down a little bit, so get it together, Canada. New Zealand 4, Australia 5, Germany, Sweden, Turks and Caicos Islands moving up the chart.
It makes me smile every time.
Turks and Caicos Islands. I don't know if you wait for this part and you all 17 of you cheer.
Yeah,
but like. Thank you so much for listening. Please reach out to us. I'd love to know what goes on. India, Mexico, Poland, Netherlands, France, Puerto Rico, Brazil, Spain, Czech Republic, Ireland, Switzerland, Taiwan, Philippines. I can just keep going on. Italy, Norway, Chile, Russia. I just try to read them off. Graham doesn't want me to because he's
many countries in the world, and they listen to us, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I try to get them in, but like I want to say that the people in Argentina and Japan and Ukraine and Denmark and Indonesia and Austria and South Africa who listen to us deserve acknowledgement. I mean, it's
and
amazing.
They should hear about Tina's fucking book.
Yeah, so, exactly. And I true. I want to acknowledge Turkey and Bosnia and Serbia and Portugal and Thailand and Slovakia and Hong Kong, and Iran, Jamaica.
Although your oh Serbian film God. Is a bit much Serbian. Yeah, like, I'll give it that.
it, in St. Mary, Jamaica, we have listeners, which just reach out to us. I'll interview you. Jamaica, Manchester, like the most beautiful music making places in the world. So freaking real, like amazing, the small town. So thank you so much. We have a Patreon. If you go to Patreon and do AGHP 666, you can see it. We have tiers everywhere from $1 to $20. You know, if you want to just throw us a $1 deal to say thanks for putting us out, you know, I would love to do this for a living and buy more like cheese sauce and canned jalapenos and stuff. So if you can, you know, just go take a look, just consider it.
Jump
just
on consider- Patreon, become a member of the Army of the Goddamned, just like Michael, Drew, Stephanie, Katie, Chris, Alan, Bacon Bits, Angela, Jasmine, Jason, Jake, Vivian, Ron, Kristen, Manny, Coleman, Ryan, Jared, Michelle, and Brandon have all become
heroes. And a big shout out to the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network for carrying us and spreading the word. And lastly, if you are struggling out there in the world, please go ahead and reach out to us or reach out to somebody. We need you around, and we all need to do this stuff together. I lost a friend pretty recently to this deal, a comedian friend, and it's heavy out there, but we need you and we love you. And we all got to do this together. And horror fans, we all got to stick together because we're the only ones who are cool. Like, let's face it. Everybody else,
true,
totally lame. So stick around. I love you. And until next time, please go start some fires and break some glass. Thank you.